This is PFW in Progress.
All right, listen up. I don't like white people. I hate rednecks. People are rednecks. I'm enjoying this.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Now get this. We ain't partners. We ain't brothers and we ain't friends. I'm putting you down and keeping you down, and you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
Paul Perillo.
I'm taking a moan in my stomach or something, bro. I got to go get something.
We eat when I say we eat.
You know, that's bullshit. That's the last straw, right? I want some food now. If you don't like it, you take me back to the penitentiary and kiss my hungry ass goodbye, right? You took me out here, you've been treating me like shit since we first left, and I want some food in a nice place, a nice atmosphere.
And Andy. And Andy? Andy Hart.
I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town. His name is
some guy named Tom.
I'll be cool. Shut up.
PFW in Progress.
Jack, tell me a story.
F*** you.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
All right, we're back. PFW in Progress. Tom Casale here with Paul Perillo. We're here with you for the next 2 hours. Paul is just getting ready, getting his pizza. What do you got there, Paul? Pepperoni?
Absolutely.
All right, we were at the press conference today. Probably the shortest press conference since I've been here,
The shortest on a Wednesday.
I don't do power rankings, but I guess if I did, I would.
What do you want me to tell you?
I would probably have the Bengals ranked as the best team in football, and here the Patriots are traveling to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals as the biggest underdog they've been in probably close to 5 years. You think there would be a lot of questions people would want to ask Bill, and it was just deafening silence.
Yeah, I thought it was a little strange. Am I on here, G? Okay, I thought it was a little strange as well. Now, obviously, you know, I think a lot of people know plenty about the the Bengals offense and the high-powered attack that they run and whatnot. Bill was highly complimentary, I thought, of the defense today.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more so than needed to be, probably a little coach speak in that. However, just interesting to me hearing him talk about not just the opportunistic nature, because that's the way I look at the Cincinnati defense, Tom. I don't know how you feel about it, but I look at them as a team that you can score some points against if you protect the football.
Yeah.
They take the ball away
a lot. They do take the ball away
a lot. If they don't take it away, they generally yield some points.
I think they're trying to build that kind of defense where they can hold you to 20 points. And then they feel that, you know, I thought Denny Green, of course, our favorite coach, Denny Green, who speaks the truth, said that the Cardinals can't play 16 to 14 games because that's not the makeup of their team. He said we might win one every now and again,
right,
but a team like the Bears are more comfortable playing those kind of games because of their makeup. And with the Bengals' makeup, I think that's how they're trying to put that together. Well, we're going to give up some points, but if we can keep it to 20 or less, we should win those games.
They feel pretty confident that if they can get the game into the 20s on both sides, they're going to win.
Right.
Whereas if the Patriots get the game in the teens on both sides, they probably feel they're going to win.
Right. And the Patriots have held their first three opponents to 17 points.
17, exactly.
And if they do that again this week, you would have to think they have a very good chance of winning.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the Pittsburgh game, and this was one of those rare opportunities because we played at night this week. We all got a chance to watch Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Terrific game in terms of entertainment. I don't think either side played that well.
No.
I think there were tons of mistakes. But you watch the way Pittsburgh played, and I could definitely envision the Patriots playing that kind of a style and having success with it.
Right. The one thing I'll say about that is it's tough to get a feel for those games when they're division rivals because they kind of know each other so well. And these two teams have only played each other 19 times in their history, and it was the last time was 2004. And it was a 35-28 Patriots victory, and that's kind of when the Bengals were just starting to make their move up the ladder.
Yeah, it's interesting. That was the one question I was going to ask Bill today, but it just seemed like the press conference ran out of steam so quickly.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to prolong it. But I was just going to ask him his thoughts on Palmer and thinking back to that game in 2004. That was almost a little bit of a coming-out party for him that day. He had some moments earlier. That was his first year as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
He had some moments earlier in the year, but he played really, really well against New England, and then he got hurt.
Right.
And I was going to ask him maybe what he's seen different from Palmer now as opposed to back that day. I think it was in early December back in 2004.
Yeah, he had those two games there, that one and the one against the Ravens where he led them from behind
late in the game too.
Those two games were kind of close together, and that was kind of the turning of the corner for him.
And a high-scoring game against Baltimore, which you know, was even more impressive.
And the one thing I thought I noticed with Palmer, I don't know if you saw the same thing, was against the Steelers. His mobility looks limited as well, just like Culpepper. The only difference is he doesn't need to move with his cannon of a right arm. But still, I think if you can get some pressure from the edge, he's not going to be able to move around the pocket that much, and maybe the Patriots can get some sacks on him.
I noticed the same thing, and it was very similar to Culpepper, and I agree with your assessment. He doesn't rely on his mobility as much as Culpepper does, so it's probably not as big a deal for him, but he was not. I thought Pittsburgh got good pressure on the passer, but I didn't think it was necessarily, six sacks worth of pressure.
Right.
That makes
right.
any sense at all. I felt like he just couldn't avoid. Every time they had a chance to sack him, they got him.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't avoid anything.
Right. Right.
You know, it was almost to take a shot at my guy, almost a little Bledsoe like. You know, the every time they seemed to have the least bit of breakdown, they got there. And with Brady. You know, more often than not, there's a breakdown. He's able to either get the ball out in time or make a quick little subtle move in the pocket. You know, you don't have to be
that
fast, but it looks like a lot of mobility is taken away.
And I think Palmer has that same kind of, like, shuffling around ability that Brady has in the pocket, and that's what he's lacking right now, where he's not really moving, like you said, whether it be just a step or two to the left or right to avoid the pressure. If the pressure's there, you're probably going to get him. And the other thing he has, and this is obviously the hot topic here, he has the ability to just throw the ball up when you have one-on-one coverage, and he's got guys that come down with the football.
Yeah, came away very, very impressed with the receivers. No big surprise there. But individually, I see why Marvin Lewis has been so patient with Chris Henry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, a guy of lesser talents, not fair, and certainly, people that listen to this show know how I feel about this. I'd rather lose with good guys than win with bad ones. So he wouldn't be on my team. But from afar and watching the game and watching the talent, I can understand why Chris Henry is still on the team after being arrested so many times. The guy can play.
Yeah, he can definitely play.
Even on that hellacious hit that he took over the middle, you know how close he came to making that catch?
No, I know. He almost had one-handed grab there.
Any less hit on that play, and he's going to make that catch.
Yeah.
That was an unbelievably badly thrown ball by Palmer, you know, to put his receiver in a vulnerable spot. He goes up in traffic, well up, one hand. He had the ball. When that hit came, the ball was in his possession.
And
that was an amazing. I mean, he's a talented kid.
And it probably says something that the Bengals' third receiver has more receptions than the Patriots' top receiver.
Well,
you know, it's and that just shows the difference in talent at the position. I mean, they're loaded. Let's be honest. I mean, they got Kelly Washington can't even get on the field because unless they go to 4 or 5 wides. And he provides them some big plays every now and again, too. It's just...
He's a red zone target, too, with
his
size.
They're just loaded, and this brings us talking about their third, fourth, and fifth receivers. What happened today, Randall Gay placed on IR, and, of course,
that's right.
Hank Potee re-signed a little earlier this year.
As I predicted to Fred, and he laughed at me and made fun of me and called me the doomsayer, naysayer, Hank Potee will be available when the Patriots lose a guy or two to IR out of the secondary. Hank Potee will be on the street and available. Lo and behold, Randall Gay is put on injury reserve today with a hamstring. Hank Potee was re-signed.
And he's going to be one. I mean, you figure if they go to three corners, it'll probably be Wilson moving inside to take one of the corner spots. You know,
they've done that a lot, yeah.
That hasn't been working, let's be honest, because Wilson has not played well at all.
No, I thought he played a little bit better Sunday night, though, did you?
Yeah.
He made a couple of big tackles in the open field where if he didn't make them.
Yeah, no, he did. But you know what's the thing I think is really missing from this team since I've come here and maybe I'm the reason for it? Is that when I used to watch the team on TV, I used to see receivers go across the middle and they used to pay for it. I haven't seen that since I've been here. Now, obviously, Harrison was hurt my first game here, and he's still not 100%, I don't believe.
I guess it is your fault.
Maybe it is. Yeah, it probably is. But I just feel that receivers run across the middle on the Patriots now with no fear, and no one gets laid out anymore. I mean, you think back to those Colts games where they punish those receivers, and I just don't see that anymore.
I think there might be some truth to that, and you know, it's funny. You know, we're talking about Cincinnati and their receivers. The one thing that stuck out that 2004 game is, you know, I remembered Hushman Zada from Oregon State, mm-hmm. and I remembered him having a huge Fiesta Bowl
against Notre Dame. Yeah.
But I didn't realize how I thought he was one of those kind of high flying, you know, tall, thin, kind of lanky guys, not really willing to do the dirty work over the middle. But he must have caught 5-6 crossing patterns that day. And they made the Patriots secondary look bad. Now, we're talking down the stretch of 2004. This is the Patriots were at the top of their game.
Yeah.
But he got his hands on so many balls.
They were very good. You know, the Patriots were very, very good defensively in 2004. Maybe the best of their three teams. Mm-hmm. I know statistically it might not be that, but they were very, very strong. And, you know, Hushman Zada was just – him and Johnson were just crossing the field at will that day, making big play after big play. It would be like 3rd and 20. They were picking him up no problem. So he kind of impressed me that day, and that's kind of stuck out to me. And they missed him a little bit the first game.
Yeah.
You know, game. Did he miss the first two games?
Two games, yeah. Last week was his first game. He had 9 catches.
Yeah. You know, all of a sudden you look at the league stats – you know, that come out, and he's among the league leaders. And I was like, geez, I thought that he only played one game.
Right.
He did. He just played one game.
And the thing here that's interesting is that Tom Brady has yet to have a Tom Brady game, and Chad Johnson has yet to have a Chad Johnson game. And you figure something's going to give this week. One of those, if not both, are going to have really good games.
Well, I can tell you, if Chad Johnson has a Chad Johnson game, then Tom Brady absolutely positively
has to have
a Tom Brady game, or the Patriots will have no chance.
Right. And, you know, this is a game I was listening to the show a little bit yesterday when you guys were on. I was a little disappointed to hear all the Maroney slamming. Because,
by me?
No, by the fans.
Oh.
Saying, because we do something that I think is a very, very good idea that maybe because the papers here don't have enough writers don't do it, but we do the opposing view, which I think gives a very good perspective on how the other team views the game. And to a man, the Bronco player said they came in here to stop the run. And as I was talking to someone, DJ Williams, someone else from behind, I didn't know who it was, I heard him say, well, the injury to Dillon didn't matter quite as much because they had prepared so much for Maroney and his cutbacks, because on tape he had made so many runs with the cutbacks, and we saw that up from the press box, Paul. The linebackers just fill in those lanes, and he had no place to run. So I wouldn't jump off the Lawrence Maroney bandwagon quite yet. He played a defense that hadn't given up a touchdown until the fourth quarter, garbage touchdown against the Patriots. It's pretty good, probably the fastest defense he'll play all year. I think both him and Dillon will have a chance to have some success this week against the Bengals.
I totally agree. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I heard a lot of people talking about Maroney maybe hesitant a little bit at the line and kind of stuttering. And, you know, some talk on the local sports radio here, WEEI, talking about that yesterday. I didn't really buy that either. I just thought that they completely stopped.
Mm-hmm.
They stuffed the run. And you know, look, that's going to happen. I mean, no one no one goes through the whole season without getting shut down. Now, is he as good as he looked, you know, right away coming out of the gates with a 29-yard run or whatever it was, you know, his first two carries, 29 and 22, I want to say? No. I mean, obviously not. We're not going to expect him to run for, you know, close to 6 yards a carry the way he did that
right.
First game. But he also wasn't completely to blame for 12 carries for 18 yards either. I mean, Corey Dillon had 5 carries for 16 yards. 10 of which came on
one
carry, and as I said yesterday, that carry was a 3rd and 8.
Mm-hmm.
So more so than anything, that caught Denver by surprise.
Right. Right. The more alarming thing to me was hearing three people, John Lynch, Ian Gold, and Mike Shanahan himself, say we wanted to shut down the run and make Tom Brady beat us. I mean, can you imagine two years ago, someone saying the words, we want, and obviously he's talking about the passing game in general and not Tom Brady, but that's my point. I mean, that's the state of the Patriots passing attack right now, is that they just didn't fear the receivers. I mean, the Broncos were just giddy after that game. I mean, as Lynch said, they had their game plan went as a script. It was just like a script, stop the run. And I think that's a big cause for concern. You know, I know everyone, you know me, I was high on Gabriel, and I know everyone was happy in the fourth quarter, but guess what? They were in semi-prevent. They weren't up at the line jamming him, and he was wide open.
Yeah, and just to defend Tom, you're still pretty high on Gabriel. I think you still expected him to be a quality receiver.
Yeah.
You're just not necessarily sold based on what we saw Sunday night, and I think we're all in agreement on that. Even, you know, the pom-pom waiver of all pom-pom waivers, Fred, said, you know, that the Broncos had changed their approach a little bit in the fourth quarter. After they got the long touchdown to Walker, which was their first possession of the fourth quarter, it was 17-0. They said to themselves, the only way we can lose this game is if we give up big points.
Right.
So even if we let them go down the field quickly, and Brady went 10 for 10, I want to say, on that drive, it still took him 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to do it. You're
right.
Not going to get three scoring drives that take 4 minutes and be able to win when there's only 13 minutes left in the game.
Right.
I mean, barring turnovers or big plays, that the Broncos said, we're content to let you dump it off to Doug Gabriel six times.
And I think they need to get Chad Jackson on the field, even if he doesn't know the entire offense, just because he has something that most of the other receivers lack. That's big play ability. His speed at least scares defenses to where they have to keep an eye on him. Without that, the Broncos just dared him to pass. And a lot of those throws, I know everyone's getting on Brady, but a lot of those throws that he threw out of bounds for a reason. Because his receivers just weren't open.
Well, that's how I felt about it, too. Now, there seems to be a couple of schools of thought. You know, some people feel like the passing game was a little bit better on Sunday than it has been. I felt it was a little too little too late. You know, I felt through three quarters the passing game was pretty ineffective.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the 320 yards were about...
Those were
Billy Volek 320 yards.
Yeah, 145, I want to say, in the fourth quarter.
I kind of liken it to the last time they played, when he hit Deion Branch late in the game, when the Broncos had just gotten the Champ Bailey return, then the touchdown, when... they were actually playing back a little bit more, but still got burnt by that play. The late in the game, kind of racking up yards. That's not really what we're looking for here. We're looking to move the ball effectively throughout the game, and that didn't happen on Sunday, and that's a concern. Now, obviously, they're not going up against the same type of defense on Sunday, but they're going up against a whole different kind of breed of offense than what the Broncos were playing up to the point. They came to Foxborough.
Interested to get your opinion on this, Tom. One of the questions today at the press conference was posed to Belichick in the manner of almost like game.
Do the chickens have large talons?
Large talons. The
large talons.
Is that Kyle?
The game plan in general. Obviously, Bill's not going to divulge.
Yeah.
And nor should he. But do you feel like the approach will be for the Patriots on Sunday to maybe try to pound the ball against a team that probably has some trouble stopping the run? I mean, Pittsburgh ran pretty effectively on Sunday. You think they might just try to, you know, keep their offense on the field? I mean, keep Cincinnati's offense off the field by trying to control clock and running the ball and moving in. Now, obviously, Bill says we're going to move the ball whatever way we feel is best for us, whether that's throwing or running or whatever. The important thing is for us to score some points. And he's right. But do you feel that the approach will be kind of run first, throw second in an effort to maybe keep Cincinnati's potent offense off the field?
If the Patriots win, I feel that's the only way they can, is if they use Pittsburgh's game plan from the first time they played last year, where they used the 1-2 punch of Bettis and Parker, controlled the clock, limited the Bengals' offensive possessions. Now, the Bengals turned the ball over in that game, but the only way you're going to stop that offense is to give them as few possessions as possible right now, because they're just too good, and the Patriots have a lot of question marks in the secondary. So I feel, you know, hey, if you're the Colts, you'll come in and say, let's go, baby. You know, we'll throw it all day with you. We can go back and forth all day. The Patriots right now aren't that kind of team, and I have to agree. I'd say yes, their game plan will be to run straight at them, Dylan Maroney, the one, I mean, I believe Dylan is okay. I don't know. There hasn't been an injury report.
Well, we'll see
yet.
At 4 o'clock today.
We'll find out.
Yeah. And I agree. And I would think that that would be, look, I think the Red Sox, I'm looking right over your head, there's a Red Sox poster, but I think the Patriots running game is pretty good despite what happened last week.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that Cincinnati can use the same kind of blueprint that Denver did. Now, they may be able to. They may try to. I do think Cincinnati has a decent secondary.
Yeah, they do.
And you might be able to leave those. You might be able to leave those guys alone with O'Neal, Ratliff, you know, Williams, and,
yeah.
And you know, I think they have some decent players back there. So they might be able to leave. You know, who's the other cornerback with O'Neal? Why am I blanking?
Torrey James.
Both of them very similar styles. They're both ball hawking kind of cornerbacks. You know, kind of like Terrell Buckley. You know,
yeah.
If there's a play to be made
right.
on the ball, they'll
they'll
get make,
beat, but they'll make plays too.
So they might feel that those guys, they can leave those guys out there on the Patriots receivers and then just do what they can to stop the run. I'm not sure they're good enough to do that. You know,
no, I agree.
But if they can't, if the Patriots have more success and they're able to be balanced on offense, unlike Sunday night. I can see that situation evolving where the Patriots maybe take 7 or 8 minutes to go down and score a touchdown. And in turn, if that happens, you might get a situation where Cincinnati gets a little antsy.
Yeah, start pressing a little bit.
And they press and they're trying to make big plays. And instead of just saying, well, we'll take 6, 7, 8 minutes to score as well, it doesn't matter.
Right.
7-7. You know, it doesn't matter if you win the game, you know, 31-28 or, you know, 12-10. But I think what you said earlier in the show, Tom, is accurate. I think some teams aren't necessarily built to win 12-10.
Right.
And I'm not sure Cincinnati is one of them.
And I agree with your pressing. I mean, we won't count the playoff game because Palmer was injured, but the Bengals had two big games at home last year against the Steelers and Colts where they really could have said, you know, hey, we're here, we've arrived, this is our time, and they lost both those games. Now, the Patriots may not be playing well, but they're still the Patriots. They've still dominated the AFC over the last 5 years.
That's a good point. Make no mistake about the way everybody else still views the Patriots.
Yeah, this is the Bengals' time to come out and say, you know what, you've had a nice run, but now we're taking it from here. But if what happens, if what you said happens, where they start bleeding the clock and the Bengals start to press and have to punt, and you know, then I think the pressure mounts on them. Hey, the Patriots are a touchdown underdog. They don't have any pressure. They're not supposed to win this game.
And you see the third downs, especially. You know, all of a sudden, you know, Patriots get the opening kick, even let's say, and they go right down and score.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's, I mean, something silly like, 8, 9 minutes left in the first quarter, Patriots 7, Cincinnati nothing. Cincinnati gets the ball, they come out, they get a first down, maybe they get two, they get around midfield, it's 3rd and 8. Got to convert this,
right.
Or we're off the field and that offense is right back out here, you know.
Right.
That can happen. I've seen it happen with Indianapolis so many times against the Patriots where you can see the pressure mounting with every third down. Well, we converted the last one, but how many can we convert
right.
here? Because that's when the Patriots are playing well, Tom, that's what they make you do. They're not allowing first downs on a play. You know, they're not allowing 20 yards at a clip the way the Colts are accustomed to getting it against
right.
other teams and the way Cincinnati is accustomed to getting it.
They're making you take
3 plays to get a first down, 12, 14 plays to get a touchdown. Some of those high-power offenses don't want to do that.
Right.
So that's why it'll be interesting. And it's a big-time contrast of styles.
And I think you'll see that kind of defense, kind of conservative from the Patriots this week.
Hey, guy.
Where they don't blitz a lot. Andy Hart in studio. Any news?
Chad Johnson with the most entertaining conference call in the history of football.
Did you listen to it?
I told Kyle to be there.
I can't hear myself.
That's what I said after the game. If you think I'm waiting for Carson Palmer, you're nuts. I'm going 85's locker.
He was generally entertaining. As you know, he's just a normally entertaining, you know, hobby opens with, how you doing? He goes, good. How you guys doing? Just peachy. Chad Johnson goes, oh, I'm just peachy too. So every answer is filled with entertainment. At one point, he was clearly eating. Somebody goes, what are you eating? He goes, oh,
not you, Robbie.
I'm sorry. And he tells, he's got this healthy meal, and then he goes, well, can we get to the trash talking now? Can you guys pass along some trash talking for me? started with 37. Gary's efforting to get the audio, so I assume later in the show you guys will be able to hear it yourselves. But started with 37. Tell him I'm going to knock his helmet off. Moved on to 22. Said, tell him to try to keep up with me, or else his number's going to look like 55. That's what 22 upside down is, right? 55, it would look like that, right? tell Junior. Oh, don't tell Junior anything. He can hurt me. tell 26 that if he tries to hit me coming across the middle, it's on right there. We're going to have to fight, and we'll both get thrown out, so don't do it. somebody goes, well, what about Ellis Hobbs? Oh, Ellis Hobbs, I don't really know him. So I'll just let my play talk to him or something like that. He just went on and on, although I guess he's very tight with Asani. I didn't know this.
Well, they asked Samuel about him, and he just said, I don't care, you know, anything that he says. I've never played against him.
Because he said they're friends, that they hang out a lot in the off season or something. And I guess Rodney and he are pretty close. He says every time he's played against Rodney, they spend like a half hour before the game talking. It's kind of a father-son relationship.
And that's interesting because I think you just saw the two styles there, the contrast of the teams. Asante Samuel made it seem like he's never even seen Chad Johnson in his life.
Right.
And Chad Johnson is telling him that he's going to make his number turn upside down.
Not only that, he's saying, can we talk trash now? Because the reporters didn't ask him fast enough to talk trash. And then somebody said, is there anybody on this team that talks trash? And he goes, no. And then he goes, whoa, wait a minute, what am I saying? Rodney Harrison, he's old school. He's like the original. He goes, he talks trash, then he knocks you down, punches you at the bottom of the pile, talks some more trash. He was as entertaining as could. Oh, and they asked him about T.O. Claims he talks to T.O. all the time. Big misunderstanding. He took his medication last night and took it on an empty stomach. And you guys all know how it is if you take some pain medication on an empty stomach. It was a misunderstanding. He was in the hospital like 2 hours, and he's at practice today.
Well, they're already disputing it on ESPN News and stuff.
No, I'm just saying, this is from, he claims he made calls this morning.
Where did the whole suicide attempt thing come from?
Well, Chad Johnson said, can you guys explain to me, you guys are reporters, how did it go from two pain pills on an empty stomach to 35?
Report.
And that's what somebody said, police report.
Yeah, it's the police's fault. Don't blame the media on this one. They reported off a police report. That's supposed to be, pretty official.
Right.
So that's the police's fault.
Well, getting back to the Chad Johnson thing, it's funny when you said the contrast of styles. Samuel would have played against them.
Yeah, I thought
they played against each other in 2004. I know they played against them in the preseason last year, right?
Right.
We were out there last year, weren't we? I want to say the first preseason.
He said he
game
never
last
covered
year.
Him or something, so he said all that.
Maybe he didn't cover him. Maybe he didn't match up with him that game. You know, for all I know, maybe Asante was inactive in that game. But
and he actually, somebody asked him, can the Patriots just match Asante up with you? And he goes, I forgot how he worded it, something about, I love Bill Belichick and God bless him, but he will not do that. He goes, if he wants to, I'll be happy. I'll promise not to score. I'll run all the way down to the one and run out of bounds at the one. I mean, Gary, you have to get the audio. It's tremendous.
That's hilarious. God bless Bill Belichick, but he won't do that.
He promised to run out at the one if he does that. If he matches somebody up with him, once he beats him, he'll run out at the one.
Why?
Because he won't score. He won't take advantage of it. That was what I took from it anyway.
That'd be too easy for him.
Right.
He'll at least give him a chance with Rudy Johnson up the middle. Right. Maybe he can stop him.
That was another question I was thinking.
Are we done now? Can I leave?
Well, you don't want to stay?
I read the schedule. If my name's not on it, I have no desire to be here.
Well, yeah, I was surprised to see you in the first
place. I just wanted to update you that it was, because Kyle's writing the update, so you may never read the quotes.
By 7 o'clock tonight, you'll read the greatest quote you ever saw.
Fair point. Did you see Kyle?
Yeah, he was coming out of the Chad Johnson conference call.
Oh, so he hasn't gone out to practice.
I knew he was getting pizza.
Oh, good. I'll find out who wasn't practicing by reading someone else's blog.
Was his hair moosed up?
Oh, his hair's moosed up. He's trying to get some from cheerleaders.
All right.
But yeah,
that was nice of you.
Make sure Gary gets that for you, because you need to hear that in the next hour and a half.
He's efforting that,
because otherwise fans are going to leave your show and go listen to the audio on the website, and you guys will have no listen.
We'll have that audio momentarily.
Good time for a break? No.
Or dead air?
I mean, no. I think it's a good time for a break.
All right, let's take a break.
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's home equity line of credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. all of which makes putting that pool in the backyard a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. Relive these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
Gonna be shot, Richard Seymour.
This autographed print exclusively from the New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points card and free 3 championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
Hmm. What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly, my hips start shaking, and my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house. Even when I'm at the movies, it happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Okay, we're back. Tom Casale and Paul Perillo. I should probably give the email address and phone number. It's webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com, and the phone number is 508-543-7482 if you want to give us a call. Andy Hart has left. It's back to just me and Paul. You want to get to the emails, Paul?
Sure.
All right, we got a great show, guys. I listen. Oh, this is from John. I don't know where John's from. Oh, Australia. Great show, guys. I listen every episode here in Australia. I watched the Patriots versus Broncos game, and it looked to me that Tom Brady just didn't look interested in the game. What do you guys think? I thought the defense showed up to play, but Tom might still be peeved about losing his favorite wide receiver. Regards, John. I don't know what your thoughts, Paul, are, but I don't think it has really anything to do with losing Deion Branch at this point.
I think Tom's probably a little frustrated.
Yeah, I think he's frustrated.
Fair to say, but I don't think it's... Look, I think a lot of people are trying to make a big deal out of his body language off that game the other night, and I don't necessarily see it as a big problem. I'm not a big body language guy. I don't think Tom has played anywhere near to the level that he's capable of playing. I think he's a much better quarterback than he's shown so far this year. However, I'm not concerned in the least about it because I think that he is, he's the best for a reason. I think he has a lot more games that he looks like Tom Brady than like Sunday night. So I'll admit that I don't think he's playing very well, but at the same time, I'm going to say that the receiving situation and the external factors are probably a bigger factor in that than his poor play. I think that he bounces back. I don't know when. I don't know how long it's going to take, but once he feels more comfortable with the guys that he's throwing to, I think you'll see a big time change in his performance.
Yeah, I agree. There's two first ballot Hall of Fame quarterbacks who towards the end of his career and one now ending his career have had similar looks on their face. Troy Aikman and Brett Favre towards the end of their careers kind of lost their receivers, and they had that look of like what do you want me to do with these guys? I feel Brady has that same look. Let's not forget that he not only lost Branch and Givens, but Tim Dwight was a guy that in crucial
Tim Dwight, Andre Davis, yeah, Bethel Johnson. I mean, he lost like five of the top six wide receivers from last year.
And I don't think the look is, oh, I miss Deion Branch. The look to me is that of frustration of, you know, where do you want me to go with the football? I just, you know, if they're taking Ben Watson away, who's open? I don't care what anybody says. People who are saying out there that these receivers are open are kidding themselves, because the Broncos sent a three-man rush a lot of the time.
Well, almost the whole game.
And if you're telling me that if you give Tom Brady that kind of time, he can't find open receivers, then that's ridiculous. This guy went from the best player in pro football to someone who should be benched for Matt Castle? Come on, that's nonsense. I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah, and I'm going to go, just to clarify, you know, when I talk about, you mentioned Tim Dwight and all those, I'm not talking about those guys in terms of what a great talent they lost.
Right.
I'm talking about Tim Dwight and Andre Davis right now represent probably more of a comfort level with Brady than Rishay Caldwell, Chad Jackson, and Doug Gabriel, and Jonathan Smith, because he just hasn't had any familiarity with these guys, you know? I'm not saying that Chad Jackson's not a better player than Tim Dwight. Of course, I mean, talent-wise, or, you know, whatever, not even a question. Chad Jackson, I think, is going to be a special player in this league. I think he's a very, very gifted young man. But he's not ready right now, in terms of his rapport with his quarterback, to come in and light the world on fire. I don't think Tim Dwight would either, but I think he'd be closer to being able to do that than Jackson is right now, based on all the time that these guys have missed. And with Gabriel and Smith, I mean, they're just coming in cold at the start of the season. I mean,
tough to do. I mean, that's really hard to do.
Very tough. And that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not trying to say that I think the Patriots made an error in letting all these guys go. I'm just saying what you're seeing right now in the struggles, I don't think you'll necessarily be seeing 5 weeks from now. And if we are, then we have a bigger problem.
But it's
I just think this is nothing that a little time in repetition can't
and
fix.
It's funny because I always wondered who the fans would side with, and obviously they would side with Belichick.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point, and I think you could go on a whole study about it. I think you're absolutely right.
And just to play devil's advocate, Bill's record wasn't really that great until Brady came in. But we have someone who agrees with us, I believe. Let's see, who is this? Loretta. All this talk of Brady losing it, not coming from this fan. They have overcome every challenge the NFL has thrown at them, and with flying Elvis colors. Take any three-time Super Bowl championship team in week three, 2 years later, and what do you see? I actually looked this up. They are exactly where they should be for a three-time Super Bowl champ in 5 years, who lost their coaches and more coaches and star receivers and linemen and capable kicker and sustained injuries. Show me a coach and a quarterback and a team with a better overall record today. This is how a championship team looks when it is working. Go Patriots in good times and in bed.
Give it back.
It doesn't say
bad. All right, Loretta.
It says, and,
hey, how
and,
you doing?
And in bed.
Just keep my... my
how you doing?
I'm not sure exactly...
Keep my bed out of the emails.
I'm not sure what she means. I guess that she means they look the way they're supposed to look.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what it means that you looked at. I mean, what did you look up? What's the precedent for... a team being 1 year removed from a back-to-back Super Bowl titles, losing their top two wide receivers. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what you can look up here.
No, I really don't. I don't know either. But I don't think the Patriots are where they want to be, and they've pretty much all admitted that at this point.
Yeah, and here's my thing. You can talk about being 2-1 all you want right now, but the fact is, I think that you can ask the Patriots, and to a man, they'll say that they haven't played well in any of the three games.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't played anywhere near their capabilities for any of the three games. If they played the Denver Broncos three times playing the way they played the first three games, they'd have lost all three.
Right.
But they played two teams that they were just superior in talent in the first 2 weeks, and talent alone got them victories, especially the first week, because they didn't play very well that first
game. No, that game they probably
should have
lost.
Better against the Jets than they did against Buffalo, and at the same time... you know, I think that was a little fluky that they allowed the Jets to get back in the game. But you can't overlook the fact that they haven't played up to their capabilities.
Okay, we have Mike Robinson. After avidly watching the games through the years, I've noticed one distinct pattern when it comes to the outcome of the game. When Brady argues with the officials, at least to me it seems when he does argue a play with with them, he loses his focus on the game and sends the ripple effect across the rest of the team, and the Pats end up losing. I know he must have a good-sized ego and has tremendous pressure on him because of the fact of the Super Bowls, but I don't think he needs to let the coaches... I think he needs to learn to let the coaches argue with the officials and get back to work at hand and move on to the next play. Paul, what do you think of that?
Well, I don't. I guess we'd have to talk.
It has anything to do with them losing.
Yeah, I guess we'd have to talk to Tom and see if he feels like, you know, what he's feeling about the next, you know, series or so after he argues with an official. You know, I can't sit here and tell you that he loses focus. This is getting back to that whole body language thing. I think it's dangerous when you look at a guy and you just make an observation and you say what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Because I think that's an impossibility. I can't look at you right now and tell you exactly what you're thinking, Tom. So I'm not going to look down on the field and look at Belichick holding on to the collar of his shirt and say that he wasn't really focused on that game. Or look at Tom Brady and see that he was kind of despondent and didn't appear to have a lot of fire and extrapolate from that that he didn't take that game seriously and wasn't really focused on what he had to do. Maybe that was the case. Maybe that's 100. I'm not here to dismiss it either. But I just think it's hard to just kind of observe something and say what it means.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it was a call that he thought was bad. To me, I'd rather see my leader standing up for my team than just sitting back and sulking.
There's not much about the way Tom Brady goes about his business that I don't like.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Okay, we got Michael from Port St. Lucie, Florida. Yesterday I wrote in and asked a question that was looking for an answer. Well, here it is again. I guess you guys didn't answer them. What do you think of taking one of the Patriots' first-round picks and maybe a receiver like Caldwell, which is the most disappointing wide receiver to this point, for some team's first wide receiver or solid second? Which teams would be possible consideration if the Pats put it in this offering a first-round pick? So he wants to trade one of their first-round picks and the receiver that he thinks stinks here for someone else's number one.
Right.
And
not even touching the fact that I don't know who you're expecting to get for a first-round pick that's going to be between 25 and 32 and Rishea Caldwell, your self-admitted most disappointing wide receiver. Regardless of what you think you can get for that package, I don't think, Tom, and you can correct me if you think differently, but I really don't think the bigger issue with the receivers is talent. I think the bigger issue with the receivers is their lack of familiarity with Brady and Brady's lack of familiarity with them. You're going to need reps. You're going to need practice throws. There's nothing that's going to duplicate the comfort level that he had with Deion Branch and with David Givens, because these guys just don't have that amount of experience with Brady. Nothing can replace that. So you can go out and you can bring in a guy who's more talented. There's no question. I mean, let's just say you bring in Randy Moss. Okay, well, he's no question. He's light years ahead of anybody that you have in talent. How much better does that make your passing game right now? Unless you're just going to say, well, we're not going to really worry about our offense. We're just going to throw it up to Randy Moss.
Say, the only thing that changes, you can just throw the ball up to him and hope he catches it.
You know, because if you're expecting to run a disciplined timing offense, then Randy Moss is going to need time to get on the same page as Tom Brady, just like Doug Gabriel is.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is that I don't know about the talent of some of the receivers, and that includes Troy Brown, simply because he's nearing the end of his career. I don't know how much he has left in the tank, and Rishea Caldwell has never really stepped up in the league, and I think they're still waiting for that, so we'll have to see if that happens during the season. They need someone that when it's 3rd and 8, Brady can go to, whether it be Ben Watson. Here's the problem I have. By the way, this emailer ends by saying, run the spy, Bill. Okay, thanks, guys. Andy is still the best. So obviously...
Well, that's sort of the kind of mentality.
There's no legitimacy to the email. The team has like 75 tight ends. You know, they keep drafting tight ends. And we think, oh, these guys will be big in the passing game. These guys will be big in the passing game. Then I come here on game day, and then I don't see any of the tight ends catching passes. Now, I know Watson has 10 receptions or something like that. But I'm talking about, you know, where's Dave Thomas? Garrett Mills hasn't been around. You know, he hasn't been activated yet. I don't know. You're drafting all these tight ends for what? Because Dave Thomas can't block. I know that. I saw him try that in training camp, and he couldn't do it. So I don't know what he's doing. I just, if you're looking for other options, maybe try some of the tight ends, try to get them involved. I don't know.
That's interesting. Interesting point. You got something, G? You pretending? Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think with the tight end situation, I think you're right, Tom. I think a lot of people were expecting this group of tight ends to come in and set the world on fire, and, you know, they've been okay. I don't think they've been a disappointment, but they haven't come in. You know, Watson, I think everybody's, and we talked about this yesterday when you weren't here, Tom, Fred, Andy, and I think everybody's expecting Watson to be Antonio Gates, and it's not fair. It's not fair to him. He's not Antonio Gates. He's not Tony Gonzalez. You know, he's Benjamin Watson, and he's a good, solid player, but I don't think he's ready to be a superstar. Now, maybe by the end of the year, he'll have proven me wrong. But so far, I'm not disappointed in Benjamin Watson's performance. He's caught virtually everything thrown in his direction. He's been open. I think Brady's missed him open a couple of times. I think he is what he is. I think he's a good, solid player. Good, solid young player. You know, I think that everybody's waiting for this, like, breakout performance that I'm not sure is there. What do you think? I mean, am I way off?
No, I agree with you. We got to ask PFWs early in the offseason there where they said 80 catches, 100 catches.
I don't think that's fair.
I think that's ridiculous. There's only a couple tight ends in the league that do that, and they usually don't do it in their, you know, as they're developing. It's Gonzalez who's been there. I mean, Gates is a... doesn't even count. He's a physical freak.
But even you look at those guys, right, for as good as Gonzalez and Gates are, they're part of offenses that have been together for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm based more on Gates' past, obviously, with Breeze as the quarterback. Yes, they don't have a great core of receivers, but they had McCardell. They had Eric Parker. They had our guy, Caldwell, as an extra guy. So there were other guys to throw to. Tomlinson catches a lot of passes out of the backfield. The offense was set. Okay, they had a great running back in LT to take away the focus. And then Gates is able to be as the best receiver. When you have a situation what the Patriots have right now, in the passing game, what are you focusing on? I'm focusing on Watson if I'm a defense.
Taking Watson out first.
I want to slow the running game, and I want to take Watson away.
And that's the problem the Patriots are going to have.
Because teams don't think that Rishea Caldwell is capable of catching eight balls for 112 yards. Now, we'll have to see. But right now, what's the highest catches a wide receiver's had in a game? Gabriel six the other night in the fourth quarter? You know, other than that, maybe four?
Well, and
Troy
I think
Brown?
Until anything changes, that's what you're going to see. Like, maybe the Bengals don't have the best defense in the world, but they may not need it to just go one-on-one with the Patriot receivers until somebody breaks out and proves that they're worthy of a double coverage or some kind of coverage because...
Absolutely.
Right now, I mean, you know, and the Broncos do have a good defense. You know, we have to give them that. They've shown that at least that much through three games.
No, but, I mean, that's the other thing we talked about yesterday. I mean, that's, you know, when you go three games in this league when you allow one touchdown and that touchdown comes in garbage time, that's pretty good. I mean, because the best defenses in the league don't allow no points.
Right.
I mean, and they've been very, very strong.
And I think this has more to do with the entire season than just one game. You know, it started from the opening play when Brady got killed and the ball was rolling around, and it really hasn't been on track since. It's just kind of been, we're waiting. I mean, maybe one week it just breaks out and there it is. And if that's the case, great. But it could also linger on all year and be a big problem because I don't know if they have the kind of defense right now that is going to continually hold the better teams to 10 to 17 points.
Yeah. No, I agree. And something's going to have to give. Something's going to have to give.
Okay, we got Tom Roberts. Hi, guys. I'm a longtime Pats fan from the U.K., only ever been to one game, Carolina, before the 03 season. On the thing that struck me about the championship-winning sides the last few years was the ability to generate a steady stream of turnovers. We're not generating a single one this year. The interception at the Jets was desperation on their part. We've got the best front seven in football, so pressuring the quarterback into mistakes should be a fairly regular occurrence. And while fumbles are largely due to luck, you'd think we'd have caused at least one in three games. I can't think of a Pats possession this year that has started in the opposition's half, and we're always getting the ball after a punt kickoff. As a very amateur football fan, it strikes me that Ty Law was a huge part of what Bill Belichick was able to do with the secondary. And without a corner like that, will continue to struggle to cause interceptions. When was the last time our defense actually scored any points? It used to be an almost weekly occurrence. Hope you read this out loud. Thanks a lot.
Well, you read it out,
yep,
out loud very well, Tom. I think he's right.
Yep, that's a big deal.
I think that's a major factor right now. They're not causing any turnovers. And this is going on a full year plus now. It's a year plus 3 weeks that they've forced very few turnovers. Bill talked about that a little bit in his press conference today, Tom. He mentioned that, a lot of it is individual plays. You have to kind of break down individual plays and see what kind of opportunities you had. And then a lot of it is actually taking advantage of the opportunities. You know, the ball has been on the ground a couple of times. Mm-hmm. They haven't been able to get it. He mentioned a specific play against Buffalo on a punt return that went off the returner's face mask rolling around, and they weren't able to get it. So, you need to take advantage of those opportunities. I guess that's what Cincinnati does very well. They're a very opportunistic bunch on defense. But I think that, and I really didn't give it much thought until that email, and I'll say that I think the Ty Law thing might not be way off base. I mean, is it a coincidence? Maybe it is. But, you know, he left in 2004.
They haven't caused
a ton of turnovers since.
They had 10 interceptions last year,
totally
one this year. And like he said, that was from a one-armed Teddy Bruschi at the end of the Jets game.
Right. You know, and, you know, you go back to 2003, the last full year that Ty Law played, 29 interceptions.
Yeah, that's this defense is really made to cause turnovers, to help create field position for the, and that's what this offense needs right now. It needs the defense to give it a hand, to give it the ball at the 30, give it a short field instead of driving 80, 90 yards, because they just can't do that on a consistent basis right now.
The other night they had, in that Broncos game, did you know that the average drive start in that game for the Broncos, it was their own 21, and for the Patriots, it was their own 22. I mean, that's a 17-7 game.
Yeah.
You know, when both teams have to go 80 yards every time, it's no wonder that the both teams only found the end zone a combined 3 times.
Right. Okay, we have L. Nicola from New Jersey. Hello. One can't help but notice a difference in Tom's body language. Spoiled.
Tom Casale?
I think they mean Brady.
Oh, okay.
Tom's body language, spoiled as we New England fans are. However, like most honest people, I've tried my darndest to refrain from making it mean something I truly have no way of knowing. Then out of the blue, on a morning network news channel featuring Tom Brady talking to a journalist in Gillette Stadium, he was asked about marriage to Bridget Moynihan.
Yeah.
Bridget, and his answer somewhat surprised me. I got to get my life figured out first, Brady answered. It surprised me because what's there to figure out? Of course the man has more success and opportunities than he needs, but didn't he the last 5 years as well? What happened this year that is giving him pause to retreat into himself and question so much? Is he beginning to doubt the system that made him, or just wonder that the other possible things can go wrong? Is he thinking that maybe he should go out on top and not risk getting hurt? Is he just frustrated with the team's performance during the rebuilding? Is he questioning whether he should start thinking about himself instead of the team and how much money he could be making elsewhere?
Is it possible to have a collapse lung?
Let's give our hero the space to be human. Let's refrain from second-guessing his private emotions. Whatever it is, Tom, we want you back, present, and focused, and we're rooting for you, and we'll love you no matter what you do.
That was Loretta again.
Loretta.
I like that email. I think there's a lot of truth to that email. And again, go ahead and call me the suck up to Brady, just like I was to Bledsoe. And you're right. I tend to overlook a lot of mistakes quarterbacks make, because I think that these two guys make a lot more good plays than they do bad. And, you know, sometimes I think we focus a little bit too much on the bad. And, you know, obviously even more so in Brady's case than Bledsoe, the good so outweighs the bad.
Let me throw something by you here, Paul.
All this negativity that's in this town
guys
sucks.
Guys like Parcells, your Coughlins, they don't really stay in one place very often because players kind of get sick of the way they run things. Belichick's been here for quite a while. Now, he's won 3 Super Bowls, but they didn't win last year. Any chance that some of these veteran players are, you know what, enough of the we put a value on a player stuff, enough of this, enough of that, you got our best players running for the door. Any, you think there's any of that?
Well, again, I'm going to refrain from trying to get inside the head of someone else without talking to them about it, but if that were the case, Tom, wouldn't that just be human nature?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Wouldn't it just be like a normal reaction when you know, you see some guys getting, you know, shown the door, especially Branch here, because it would seem to me that Deion Branch was everything that they want, mm-hmm. they being the coaching staff and the organization. You know, he was the first guy to do all the charity stuff. He was the, you know, the one of the hardest working guys on the team. He was always in the off season. He was always part of the program. Always willing to go out and work with Brady, whether it was part of the OTAs here at Gillette Stadium or on their own. Team player all the way. Performed best in big games. I mean, everything intangible about Deion Branch you had to like.
Mm-hmm.
And yet still no exception made for him either. Again, I don't want to make this a referendum on whether or not the Patriots did the right thing or
right.
not. We talked about this yesterday, Tom. I think you could take every single individual move of this offseason and make an argument that it was the right move.
Right.
But collectively, I think we'd all agree this wasn't a great offseason for the Patriots.
No, not so far, that's for sure. And there's one thing that I would just like to mention. Now, obviously, we know Richard Seymour is a great player. He's getting paid like a great player. And because of that, I think it's about time we stop saying, well, what he does doesn't show up in the stats. I think he needs to start making some more plays. What do you think about that? Because I'm watching the games, and I don't see Richard Seymour. Now, I know, yeah, he's getting double-teamed, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know what? So's Michael Strahan. So's Dwight Freeney. I'm a little sick and tired of hearing the, well, he only had 2 tackles, but he does the other things. Well, you know what? Start doing some things that change the game around, because you're getting paid $29 million or whatever he's getting paid.
Well, that's I'll tell you this, Tom. I don't think that Richard played very well Sunday night.
No, I did not. That's what made me think of it, actually,
you know,
was the Sunday night game.
And it's funny, because I thought that Denver was content to run away from him in that game. They wanted to keep running to Ty Warren's side.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of times, to keep him honest, they slipped in some runs to Seymour's side. They had a lot of success on those runs.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you kind of saw it balance out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was almost like they said, why are we running away from this guy? We're having pretty good success over here. So maybe there is something to what you're talking about.
I just feel a guy who's getting paid that much money, at some point we got to stop saying, well, what he does doesn't show up in the stats. We need to see some stats, because we're killing Mario Williams for not having any sacks or anything. Well, maybe he's pulling a Richard Seymour. Maybe what he's doing, you know,
right.
isn't showing up in the stats.
The only thing is his defense is allowing 40
yeah,
plus.
Yeah, and his coach said that he stunk. Obviously,
he didn't
have a sack.
Huh? I didn't see that. Kubiak said he stunk.
Oh, he called him out in the media.
Oh, wow.
Said he's not playing well.
No. Wowie.
You know, you just got to wonder, though, if they had both players ranked the same, you have to wonder if the league said, you know what, if you like them both, why don't you take Mario Williams and let the Saints have Reggie Bush? Just food for thought.
You mean the other way around?
No. Have Houston take maybe the league said, you know what, if you like both players that much, you know, if they're dead even, why don't you go with the defensive guy?
That's so the Saints. So you go with Andy and I's theory that that block punt the other night may or may not have been on the level?
I think there's some things a little weird in New Orleans.
Of course, I know that you and Andy had Atlanta in the game. And
no, you know what? That was a terrible pick by us, because if I was back in my old gambling days, there's no way I wouldn't have the house on New Orleans. I was thinking of that as I was watching the pregame stuff, and I knew that I had picked Atlanta, and before the game had even kicked off, I said to myself, I got the wrong side here. There's just too much emotion that they'll ride it enough to be where they'll have a shot to win the game, because they're going to get off to a quick start, and then they just never gave it up. But I will tip my hat to Sean Payton. The Cowboy fans couldn't wait to run him out of town, because he was so conservative, and you know, they said they laughed when the Saints got him as the head coach, but they're probably not laughing now.
Well, obviously he's doing a very good job, but in terms of the conservative nature, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. Just happened to catch the Green Bay game. Green Bay was down 14 late in that game. They went down and scored, got within 7. They had to stop them, you know, in the next possession. Three runs.
Oh, did he?
Three runs, punt. And then they ended up, the defense stopped Green Bay in Saints territory when they were trying to tie the game. They ended up holding on to win the game. But that conservative thing kind of stuck in my head. He did it the same way we've been complaining for the last couple of years.
Well, learned
about
it from the best. We got Ryan Ward a little nervous. How are we going to beat them Bengals? Seriously, how are we going to run on Sam Adams? Are Copeland and Mankins together big enough to move him? Well, in defense, Sam Adams plays like one play every 30. He takes the rest off.
That was funny the other day against Pittsburgh.
Can Doug, Troy, or Rashea get open against O'Neal and the rest of the secondary? The front seven can no doubt limit Rudy Johnson, but can Hank Potee stop Johnson, Hushmanzada, or Henry?
But why can the front seven, just to interrupt for a second, why can the front seven no doubt contain Rudy Johnson when it couldn't
stop Tatum Bell? Can Hobbs, Samuel, Scott, our old friend Hank, even keep those guys in front of them? This is weird. I haven't been afraid of a Patriots opponent since we got blown out in Buffalo all those years ago. This must be how the Browns fans feel every week. P.S. Did Brady's girlfriend dump him? He looks bummed out. His mom or dad sick? Well, we've already touched.
The rest
on those.
Of the stuff, though, is I mean, look, I'm never going to say the Patriots don't have a chance to win a game. I don't believe that, and it's not just because I'm trying to be a wishful thinker or a homer or anything. I just think the Patriots are a pretty good team. I don't think they're the best the way they have been in the past, but they're a pretty good team. So I'm not going to say they have no chance to win this game. That said, a lot of the matchups in my mind. Are in the Bengals' favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no... I mean, I think even the biggest homer, in other words, Fred, would admit that on paper, if you played it on paper, the Bengals would win. Now, as you guys have told me many times, I've only been here a short time, and these are the type of games the Patriots usually win.
These are the games the Patriots always win.
So I think that's also key here, because... It is the type of game the Patriots, I mean, touchdown underdog. I don't even know when the last time that was. So if they do go out and get blown out, then we don't even have that to say, you know, well, these are the kind of games they win or they don't lose back to back games. All that gets thrown out. Basically, you're 2-2. If Miami wins, they play in this week?
I would assume, right?
Or they have a, I don't know, they got the byes going now, I don't know.
Oh, the byes aren't in the same week, though? Usually isn't,
is it?
Division would be a bye
together. Well, I was just going to say, if they win, then you got two and two teams playing for, for a winning record the week later.
That's true, Miami's playing Houston.
Well, there you go.
Although it is at Houston.
Well, look out. Well, if Culpepper,
Mario Williams would be all over Culpepper.
That defense ranks last in every category. So if Culpepper can't get it done this week, then they need to make a switch because anybody can throw on that team. We got P.J. Nacarla. P.J. Nacarla. Is that right, Gary? Nacarla? Nacarelli. P.J. Nacarelli. And we got a Paisano. What's up,
guys? You'd think you'd be able to pronounce it.
Yeah, well, I have, you know, it's one of those real Italian names. It's hard to get. What's up, guys? I love the show. I can finally listen to Pat's talk here in Philly. Anyway, I agree with the assessment of most everyone about Tom Brady's demeanor on Sunday night. Everyone is trying to figure out why he's upset. But no matter what the problem is, he just can't do that on the field. The leader of the team cannot have his head down during the second series of the game because the rest of the team, as well as the fans, sees it and it affects the team negatively. We went through that here in Philly with Donovan McNabb about 4 or 5 years ago. The leader has to always keep his team up and always make them feel that he is in control and that they are going to win. As soon as Brady puts his head down, it was a message to the team that I can't get it done today. I love Brady, but I didn't like his attitude Sunday night. Later, fellas. And it's another one that getting on Brady.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it enough. I don't think it has anything at all to do with anything. How's that sound?
Okay, well, we got Phil on the phone.
Phil! Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Phil? What's up?
Hey, I agree with you about Seymour.
Oh, you do?
I think he's the third-best lineman on the team the last couple of weeks.
He was Sunday night. I have no doubt about that.
I just, I was watching, because I've been watching Wilfork a lot. This is how I came about this, because I thought Wilfork, there was a heck of a battle between him and Nalen. The other, I mean, those two were really going at it. That, you usually don't, have a lot of fun watching those guys in the trenches, but that was a real battle. Wilfork won some of the time, Nalen won some of the time, but the reason I noticed it is I'm watching Wilfork, and I keep seeing him penetrating the line of scrimmage, and I never see Seymour. And then we see Ty Warren, and people can say, well, they're able to do that because of Seymour, but you know what? Umanyora is probably able to do it because of Strahan, but Strahan still gets 13, 14, 15 sacks a year and all that. So I think it's time he needs to step up and put up some numbers.
Do you think they were running at Colvin and away from Vrabel too during that game?
No, I think they ran the opposite way. I think they ran at Warren and Vrabel, and then they mixed it up a little bit by trying to run back at Seymour in Colvin, and they had some success on those. And it was funny, in the first quarter they must have run, you know, 8 for every 10 at Warren and Vrabel, but the two others were both big gains, and we were all looking at each other and saying, why do they keep running to the right side? They're having more success running left. And then we were like, well, you know, Seymour's over on that side, so maybe that's why they're going away. But I think as the game wore on, I think they kind of evened it off a little bit, realizing that they were having some success. That's why I agree with Tom. I think that Seymour didn't play, you know, probably his best game the other night.
Yeah, and Phil, you know, I'm not saying that Richard Seymour is not a good player, but with all this talk about, well, Tom Brady isn't doing this, Tom Brady isn't doing that, I was just thinking about, well, how about the leader of the defense, Richard Seymour? What has he been doing, you know, during this whole thing? You know, let's see him step up. Let's get some pressure on the quarterback. Let's get some sacks. Let's get some turnovers on the other end, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, part of it may not be just Seymour is playing a little off, but I think Warren's playing great.
Yeah. Warren's playing
Warren
tremendous.
Has been very, very good. I agree. As a matter of fact, I'm writing about him for the next issue. And he'll be our poster for the next issue. It'll be all Ty Warren for the next issue.
Another question about, I watched the tape of the game so I could watch all the line play. It seems like the Denver offensive linemen are holding on every play, and that's part of their strategy, is to hold on every play from the first play and challenge the referees to call holding on every play. Am I overreading what I'm seeing there?
I mean, I know they got called for holding a couple of times.
I would say they...
All game.
I would say they probably hold a little bit more than some of the other teams. I've noticed that throughout the years, just watching the Broncos, that when a hole opens up, sometimes they do have a guy's jersey, and maybe that's taught to them that, you know, hey, the referee's only going to call it one. Maybe they do a study. Maybe it only gets called one out of so many times, or if you hold it here, that I don't know. But you might have a little bit of a point. I don't think they hold, like, I wouldn't say they hold like 50% more than any other team in the league, but every now and then when I used to watch games on TV and they'd show a replay, I did notice the same thing, that it did seem like they hold a little bit.
On running plays, too, you can get it. I mean, it happens. I have no doubt that the Broncos held a lot more than they were called for the other night, but they, you know, I mean, I can't think of one really, really big one that they overcame, and they were backed up on their own goal line. They got a first down. Then they got a big gain shortly after that, and they got a holding call. And so now it's like second and 16 from their 5, and that was the possession that they eventually threw the bomb to Walker for the touchdown. So, you know, I think that a lot of times, and Phil, I'm not taking a shot at you because I agree with you. I do think the Broncos do tend to. Yeah, I think when you have an undersized offensive line and it has that much success, there has to be a reason. That's probably one of them. They're probably very good at getting away with holding. You know, and I think in talking off the record to some guys, I'm not going to say who, they felt like they were held a little bit during the course of the game. I just think it's part of football. I think there's penalties that happen. You know, no one wants to give the AFC Championship trophy back from 2003 or whatever it was, when Roman Pfeiffer absolutely assaulted the Colts receivers on those plays, with the game on the line. So I just think it's part of the game, and it's unfortunate. I'm a big advocate of just get rid of all the officials. So just have one guy out there to spot the ball and just let all the other penalties go.
Be a good cable program.
That's why they don't put me in charge of these things, though, Phil.
One more question: do you think that the Patriots coaching staff was a little slow to adjust to what Denver was doing to them on defense? I mean, they're geared up to stop the run by everybody's account, and it just seemed like the Patriots didn't make the adjustments on offense that you'd expect them to make.
Well, that's an interesting question because
they threw the ball 55 times.
Oh no,
but not early.
But
I think they threw it early, late, and every time in between. I mean, they only ran the ball 12 and 17 times.
But Paul, remember when I asked Belichick about the blitzing with the running game, and he said, "Oh yeah, they'll blitz because they're a stunning team and they have to blitz behind the
stunt." I do remember that.
And I was watching the game, and I didn't see him stunt a lot.
They didn't blitz. That's
and they
for
didn't
sure.
blitz at all. And I wonder if that kind of—I mean, that might have just been Belichick speak. I'm not speaking for him, but maybe that the non-blitzing at all, maybe they changed things up on defense because Shanahan even said that they, you know, they changed a lot from what they did the last time they played them. And they, you know what? Maybe he's just one step ahead because it's obviously the one guy Belichick has trouble beating.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point though, Phil, because. You know, maybe it was a late adjustment. I just looked at it as if the Patriots had success throwing the football, that may have gotten them out of, you know, them being the Broncos, out of what they did defensively. I think the key was they could keep stacking the line to stop the run as long as they weren't getting hurt by the pass. And they weren't really getting hurt by the pass all night.
One other thing on that flea flicker that it had in the first, was it the first quarter or the first?
I think it was late. I think it was the third quarter.
Yeah, I watched that play a couple times. I don't blame Brady at all. I don't think that was overthrown. I think it was underrun, if anything. It seemed like the last 5 or 6 yards, you know, Troy Brown just really didn't dig hard to get that ball.
I think that was a perfectly thrown ball. I mean, it didn't connect, but I think he threw it as well as you can throw it. But you know how I am, Phil. It's never the quarterback's fault.
Hey, thank you, guys.
All right, take care, Phil.
See ya.
Okay, it's...
I agree with that. That was a good call. I agree with a lot of stuff that Phil just said, by the way.
Yeah, me too. It's web radio at patriots.com. Phone number's 508-543-7482. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Philip! Hey, man, what's happening, Phil?
Bank of America would like to take a moment to let you hear what our home equity line of credit sounds like. You see, if you want to remodel the kitchen...
It smells great, hon.
Or renovate the bathroom...
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my...
Or fix up anything around the house, Bank of America's Home Equity Line of Credit is the easy, low-cost way to make it all happen. There's no paperwork to bring, so applying is simple. And you'll have access to your money just about everywhere, by phone, online, and at our banking centers nationwide. All of which makes putting that pool in the backyard... a little less of a dream and a little more of a reality. So whether you want to have the pros handle it or do it yourself, a Bank of America home equity line of credit is your ticket. Apply today. Just visit bankofamerica.com, call 1-800-900-9000, or stop by your neighborhood banking center.
Clementine.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Bank of America. Higher standards. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
The New England Patriots won an amazing 3 Super Bowl championships in 4 years. We live these defining moments in Patriots history with a limited edition print featuring action photos and images of the 3 championship banners that now hang at Gillette Stadium. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by perennial Pro Bowler Richard Seymour?
Gonna be shot, Richard Seymour.
This autographed print exclusively from the New England Patriots is perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on the Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points card and free 3 championship banner print signed by Richard Seymour. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph print limited to the first 300 with qualifying purchase. Visit PatriotsExtraPoints.com for details.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip, and suddenly... My hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
This is PFW in progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddie, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddie in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddie and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, some tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. But dumb. I'm smart. And I want to spend.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom's no longer consigliere. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. There's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it.
Why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in progress.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
All right, we're back. Tom Casale and Paul Perillo. It's web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. One thing we should probably mention is that it has been reported that the Patriots tried out 72-year-old Vinny Testaverde. Apparently, he still has that strong arm that Bill Parcells always says that he has.
Bill Belichick always says he has it, too, by the way, before you keep taking shots at my boy Parcells.
No, I'm just saying. He does keep himself in tremendous physical shape. I know that. He can throw the football, that's for sure. But it's interesting because when Maddox and Bowman were tried out, Andy Hart was a dead set, oh, there's nothing wrong with Brady, they're just doing their job. Now that Testaverde's been brought in, Andy Hart has pulled his usual 180.
Right.
Now Brady will be out for the season. He'll be on IR anytime soon. But that's interesting that they're still looking at the veteran quarterbacks, and the Testaverde one is even more interesting, obviously, because of the connection.
Yeah, and he's a guy that could probably come in and pick up the offense immediately if need be. You wonder maybe if it's maybe they're looking at it as an opportunity to get a set of experienced eyes on the sideline.
Mm.
You know, like he's had that veteran backup quarterback since he's been the starter, and now Brady is not probably, no disrespect meant to Castle, but he's probably not getting a lot from that.
Right.
In terms
he's
of
more
what
of the
seeing.
Mentor.
Yeah.
I saw him today walking in with JT O'Sullivan. Like, yeah. He's kind of mentoring these guys.
Yeah.
And he's, like you said, he's always kind of had that guy ahead of him who was a little bit older. And
yeah, and even though he probably didn't get a ton of that from Flutie last year because Doug was new to the system as well.
And doesn't like anybody.
Well, forget, I was going to leave my personal shots out of it. But
well, it's true.
Maybe, like a guy like Heward in the past was a good sounding board for Tom. And you know, maybe he figures, Bill figures that Testaverde might be able to come in and pick some stuff up on the sideline. Who knows? Maybe he's looking at it as a way to light a fire under Brady. I don't know.
That's true, because I will say that Tony Romo said he learned quite a bit from the year when Testaverde was there, just the way he practices and the way he goes about his business in the game. So maybe you're right. Maybe he just wants another veteran presence, you know, at that position. You know, obviously Castle has the physical skills, but like you said, he's just a young kid, and this could be a way of getting someone else in here.
Like, it could be the middle of the second quarter, and Brady might be frustrated. I don't think he's going to come to the sideline and get any answers from Matt Castle.
Right.
Again, there's no disrespect intended with that. I just don't think that Matt
Castle... He doesn't have any advice.
Yeah, he doesn't have the experience. He's a kid. He's played one game in a year plus of pro football.
So that'll be it. They, you know, signed Hank Poteet, their annual Hank Poteet signing today. And what's going on here? Let's listen
to Chad Johnson.
Okay, we have the Chad Johnson soundbite. You don't want to miss this.
Hello?
Hello,
what's
Chad. How are you?
Hey, how's everybody?
Just peachy.
Me, I'm peachy too.
Well, I would think you would be after the win last week. You're 3-0 against the Patriots, and you've become a team of national recognition.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about the process it took to get to this point with this team as one of the live teams every week that people want to see.
Oh, man, for one is buying in to the form that was Coastal was brought. You know, when Coastal was brought here, now just having a winning attitude. You know, that's most important, because if you know in past history or past years, I mean, we would lay down, you know, before I got here, and, you know, the first year... My first year with the Bengals, you know, we were 2-14. And once Coach Lewis got here, it's like, you know, he came in with the formula. Well, you guys got to believe. You got to trust me. And we trusted everything he's brought to this organization, his team, and it paid off.
Part of that, of course, is get players like Chad Johnson and all the other players that you had that have suddenly become, you know, nationally known receivers, certainly the receivers. But what about working with Palmer? Coming to a point where all of you can work so well with him.
Carson is, man, very, very good. One of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And what he, with his presence here, he makes it easy for all of us. It makes it easy for the coaching staff. He makes it easy for Coach Brad Bukowski to call plays. He makes it easy for the receivers to catch the balls. You know, so, I mean, having somebody like him, man, is a good plus. I mean, it's no different than the Patriot receivers having Tom Brady. He just makes everything simple.
Chad, do you have a checklist?
Yeah, it's in there.
Who's on it this week?
You know, the funny thing is I have this checklist, and it is somewhat getting frustrating because I'm getting double and triple covers, so I'm not getting an individual battle, which I'm hoping for, or which I'm really trying to... really trying to anticipate getting by having the checklist. So, I mean, it's really not working right now.
Chad, part of that is obviously when you get double-teamed and triple-teamed, Carson's going to other receivers, TJ last week, and Chris Henry.
Oh, yeah, they are balling out of control.
They are that.
You know, it was like, I was at receiver last week, and I'm on the field, and I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at the play getting ready to develop because we got Ike Taylor in my face. We got Joey Porter running to the flat and Troy Polamalu all the way over top trying to cover the D ball. And it's like, I really don't even have to run. All I needed was some popcorn and soda and just watch 84 and 15 just go to work on the other side, man. It was nice. It was a beautiful game, and I really enjoyed myself.
A lot of your teammates after that game gave you credit for not complaining about where was the ball. You only had one catch. Can you talk about what it took for you to mature to get to this point?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm not even going to lie. I know you guys reporters. It took every bit of everything I have in my body. Everything. It got to a point where I was just talking to myself on the sideline. What would God do in this situation? You know, I ain't got to that point. You know what I mean? But you know who kept me calm was Carson. Carson continuously saying, it's a sign of respect. It's a sign of respect. Don't get flustered, because when your number is called on, even though it wasn't, when your number is called on, I'm going to need you to make the play for me. And
Chad,
he kept reiterating it, so it kept me calm throughout the whole game.
Chad, how can a guy like you or a guy like Chris or a guy like TJ take advantage of a smaller cornerback or some or a smaller safety covering you?
You know, in my situation, the way I feel, the size really doesn't matter. It's all on the skills of that corner, whether you're short, whether you're big or not. You know, you have strengths and you have weaknesses. And, you know, being a smaller corner, of course, you know, you're faster, you're quicker than most taller receivers. And what you have to do is beat bigger receivers to the point. And that's the whole point for smaller corners. Asante, a very, very good friend of mine. We hang out all the time and all season. I know him very well. When he plays against bigger corners, not specifically myself or anyone, he just has to beat bigger receivers to their point, to either getting to the ball first or getting out his break before the receivers do, so he has an advantage. Now, it also works the other way, and bigger receivers being able to shield smaller corners away from getting to that point. So, I mean, it goes hand in hand. It's like whoever gets the what first wins the match.
Chad, I assume you don't expect the Patriots to just single you with Asante at any point.
You know what? Mr. Belichick, I love him to death, but he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it.
Why? Why won't he do it?
Why?
Yeah.
It's the same reason no one else has done the last 3 years. But, you know, I mean, tell him, please. I mean, if he feels free, I mean, just give me a little bit of one-on-one. I won't score. I'll stop at the one and go out of bounds.
How do you know Asante? From Florida? Or
from Florida. You know, we have a pack. All the Florida guys know each other, whether we went to school or not. At some point in time, we meet up, especially when you're in the NFL. I've known him for, 4 years now?
Chad, lately some people have been saying that wide receivers have become the prima donnas of the NFL, that they're the only guys that whine and moan when they don't get the ball. Everybody else just does what they're supposed to do. Is that a fair criticism? And if so, do you mind it?
You know what's funny? Is every receiver does it. Everyone, whether you do it publicly or whether you do it behind closed doors, every receiver does it. Every receiver, good receiver, great receiver, wants the ball in his hands. He wants to make plays. He wants to help contribute. Now, the outside world turns it into a negative. But what coach doesn't want a receiver that wants the ball, you know, on that critical third down or wants to make plays for you? But they've taken that scenario and they've sort of turned it into a negative, to where it's a negative thing for wanting the ball now. We have to remember, when a receiver has that type of feeling, it's a good thing. It's not a bad. And I continue to hear it being turned into a negative perception, and it's not good.
Chad, what are you eating?
Oh, right now? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to smack you.
That's all right.
No, you know,
but we're curious.
My lunch is very short. It's only 20 minutes, so I'm eating white rice, baked chicken. I got some devil eggs and some green peas.
That's very nutritious.
Very, very. I have to stop eating McDonald's.
Hey, Chad.
Hey, can I talk trash to you guys so you guys can hear the message?
Absolutely. Sure.
Sure.
Okay, good. You tell 37, I'm going to knock his helmet off. Okay, you tell Asante to make sure he continues to have help all four quarters, or his 22 is going to be 55. Isn't that what it looks like upside down? Okay, wait a minute. I'm not finished. You tell Junior, when I'm done with him, never mind, I'm not going to pick on Junior. Let me wait a minute. That's not a good one. I can get hurt there.
How about Ellis? Ellis Hobbs, 27.
You know what? I don't really know Ellis, so I'm going to leave him alone until I get on the field. Then I'm going to pick on him. You tell Eugene Wilson, if he hits me across the middle, we'll probably have to fight and get thrown out the game right there on the spot. My last hit I was going to take this year was in Cleveland, and if anybody hits me like that again, it's going down.
Can anybody on the Patriots trash talk like Joey Porter?
No. Yeah, what am I talking about? Rodney. Easy. He's the original, old school trash talker. Hit you, still talk trash. Punch you on the bottom of the pile, talk trash. Oh, man, he's the original.
What is there anything that Rodney has said to you that is printable? That's good?
You know what? Rodney, I don't know if I don't think he minds if I say this, but Rodney is one of those guys that I sit down and talk to every pregame for 20 to 25 minutes on keeping my head clean, you know, just staying focused. It's more of a of a father-son talk every time I talk to Rodney.
And he gives you the advice?
Oh, yeah, man, big time. We did it last year. We did, I mean, 2 years ago, actually, when we played him in the preseason, man, he gave me some great advice and just stand on a straight line and just stand focused and stand out of trouble. And if I'm in the headlines, make sure it's for something positive.
Do you have that same talk with Chris Henry, or do you think you should?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I got Chris under my wing, man. Chris is going to be fine, man. He's a great addition to this ball club. He's what I call a Randy Moss threat. Maybe some people might see it that way. I call him my Randy Moss threat. So, I mean, I'm excited for us, man, what we have going on. And we got two things that aren't back right now that is going to make this offense super scary. Two names. That's Chris Perry and Antonio Chapman. And when those two get back healthy, it's going to be ridiculous.
How upsetting was it to learn of the news about Terrell Owens?
You know, T is fine. You know, T and I talk every day. We just talked Monday night during the Atlanta-New Orleans game for like an hour watching the whole first quarter. So as soon as I got the news and I came in this morning, you know, I had to call, you know, I had to make my call to make sure everything was okay. And all it was he took the pain medication for his hand, but he took it on an empty stomach. You know what happened? I'm sure if any of you have ever tried to take pain medication on an empty stomach, your stomach is messed up and there's no way, you know, for you to actually fix it because you're taking pain medication. So he, you know, went to the hospital. He was only there 2 hours, and he checked out. He's at practice today.
So you spoke to him this morning?
No, I didn't speak to him, but a source very close. I mean, T is fine. I mean, who can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
How do they go from taking a couple of pills to 35? How do they do that?
Police report. People like us.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
35 pills, guys, you know you're dead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chad, when you're talking trash with guys on the field, are they all just laughing, knowing that you're just enjoying yourself
The funny thing is it's funny, but in the back of their mind, they know, you know what, he means business. Because I talk it, but I mean business, and I walk it, and it's never in a negative or unsportsmanlike way. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's more every time I do it, and they all understand it. That's what's so funny about it. Everybody understands that. It's merely a challenge. Like last week, the thing with me and Porter before the game. Now, that was serious. And it's merely a challenge. And everyone always steps up to the challenge. The checklist is nothing but merely a challenge. Nobody takes offense to it. Everybody knows how I am. And it's the way I approach the game and play it.
What names are on the checklist this week, Chad?
You know, Asani. Since Asani is the best corner there, Asani's name will be on there. I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't gone against him, I think, in what 2 years now. So it's just going to be fun, man. I'm excited.
Anything else?
Chad,
thank you so much.
Okay, guys.
Okay, that's Chad Johnson. So I guess we now have the answer to the question, who's going to cover it, number 85? That'll be Asante Samuel, whose name is on his checklist. And we now have John in Palm Bay on the phone. John.
Hey, I just had a quick question for you guys. First of all, do you know if some team came to us at the end of this year and offered us a 3 or 4 for backup quarterback, what would you say the Patriots would probably do, take it or walk away from the deal?
A 3 or a 4 for Castle?
Oh, for who?
Yeah, for Tack Castle.
Oh, for Castle. Oof. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think so. I think that he's a young guy that they have under their control for 2 more seasons. I believe he signed a 4-year contract as a rookie. But not costing a lot of money, developing. I don't think they would, no.
You don't think they'd trade him? Because I've heard that Tampa Bay, one of the players that they were looking at, if Phil Simms might be gone for more than this year, it would be him.
I think to get a 3rd or a 4th round pick for Matt Castle would be a strong trade for New England because Castle hasn't played at all, doesn't even have really college experience. So to take a guy late in the 7th round and then 2 years later flip him over for a 3rd or 4th round pick, I think that's a good trade. However, I don't see why you get rid of a backup quarterback because when you don't really need to. I mean, you know, maybe this time next year when he's you know, only going to have 1 year left on his contract after, you know, after the 2007 season. Maybe they may be more apt to do it. That's a good question, though. I mean, if he's generating some interest now with Chris Sims' you know, health situation, I got to think that Chris is done for the season, at least. Yeah, I don't know. Tom, what do you think?
I agree. That's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
It depends on how highly the coaching staff is on Castle and whether or not they believe he can develop even more and possibly get more for him down the road, kind of like the Matt Schaub situation in Atlanta. But a third round, like you said, a third round draft pick for a guy that has never played. I mean, I know we love to fall in love. We like to fall in love with these guys in the preseason, like Bam Childress, who cleared waivers 10 times and nobody wants, and can't get on the field for a team that needs receivers. But you know, he, like Paul said, he's never proven anything. So if you get another third round draft pick,
it'd be hard overcome. Yeah, it'd be hard to overlook that. If someone said, "I'll give you a third round
quarterback
pick
next year and coach him up."
Right now, John, you're down in Florida.
Yeah.
Are you a plan? Are you John Gruden? Are you taking the temperature of the Patriots?
No, that's just a fan. I just saw it on a blog for Tampa Bay fans.
Big Buccaneers fan? You're looking to see if you can steal a quarterback?
That's my next favorite team besides Patriots.
Yeah. No, I think it's an interesting point that you raise. And
the other question I had is, do you guys have any, I know you guys have a travel organization for fans up there, but when Patriots travel down to Florida, do you guys have any things for fans down here that they can hook up with travel organizations to do buses or
Gary,
whatever,
do you know
like Dolphins or Jaguar games?
Yeah, I'm not positive on that. I'm sure there are things, and you can keep poking around those message boards because I'm sure that they would know a lot more. You know, obviously those guys are fans. We see large groups. There's a large Patriots fan club in Arizona, I know. I think out in California there's a group that gets together. But I'm not overly familiar with one in Florida.
Yeah, there's a lot of Patriots fans down here, I can tell you that.
Well, obviously a lot of transplanted New Englanders, too, so it makes sense. Every year we go to Miami, there's a sizable Patriots contingent down there. So, yeah, I mean, I would keep your eyes open, poke around the message boards, looking around, and, you know, maybe post something looking for like-minded individuals looking to go to the Jaguars game. Or that we've got Miami and Jacksonville, so we'll have two trips to Florida this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
All right, John.
Have a good day.
Thanks for spreading the rumor mill. I think that's an interesting point. As much as I think that it would be tough to get rid of a guy like Castle 2 years in, if someone offers you a third-round pick, I think that's awfully hard to turn down.
I got
to
say, Paul, Leonard
LaPadula
disagrees with you. His title is really dumb questions, and I'm sorry, Leonard, but I'm going to have to agree with you on this one. I'll get to the first question, which really isn't that dumb. Why didn't the Patriots use the no-huddle offense against the Broncos early on? Because he said late in the game it seemed like it was tiring them out.
I don't think anything late in the game was bothering Denver in that game, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think that when the game was over, the Patriots started moving the ball.
All right, now for the really dumb part of his question.
I don't think that's a dumb question, by the way.
No, that wasn't, but this one is. If our game plan is to run the ball first against the Bengals, wouldn't it make sense to put Matt Castle in for at least a few plays or drives based on the situation? His scrambling would add an extra dimension to the run game, and his passing is pretty decent, too. He wouldn't be as effective changing plays at the line of scrimmage or recognizing defenses, so I'm not saying he would be better than Brady, but maybe for certain situations. Also, with the Bengals' 10 sacks this season, 3.3 per game, it might be better to reduce risk to Brady this week and just make sure he's still there for Miami next week. Paul.
I'll let you handle that one.
That is an absolute craziness. I've heard about the knee-jerk reaction of New England fans, but I never thought I'd see it.
We
had a couple of Tom Brady.
I'm just going
to
say that we had more than one email suggesting that Castle should have played instead of Brady Sunday night.
And, you know, I remember last year watching the Yankees when they had the slow start, Rivera and Jeter, and they both got booed at home. And I said, you know, that just shows the classless Yankee fans. You talk about two guys who don't deserve to be booed ever in New York. It's those two. And Brady has had a slow start, and people already want a guy who couldn't win a job in college football to play in his spot. Now, I understand that Leonard is not saying that he takes over for Brady to put him in for a few series.
It doesn't make any sense. Your strategy part of this, and I know I agree with Tom. Yeah, I know you're not saying that Castle should play over Brady, but your strategy is flawed. You don't put a different quarterback in to run the running game and whatnot. And if you have so little confidence in your offensive line to keep Brady healthy, then you got bigger problems than changing quarterbacks midstream. Tom Brady's the quarterback of the New England Patriots, period. End of sentence, end of graph. Move on.
Number 42, Mariano Rivera.
We have Michael Monk coming in. How about this for optimism? Wow, the wheels are really falling off. Get out the super glue and quickly. Stick a fork in us. We're done. So we win the East, right? Or did someone forget to send that memo to the Jets, Miami, and even the Bills? I read that some believe it is Mr. Kraft Jr. who is making these quote-unquote business decisions and sending away a lot of talent. All looked well at the beginning of camp, but here we go again. Do we have any idea as to what really is happening with our draft pick at wide receiver, injured or in the doghouse, meaning Jackson? How about the signing of the water boy for wide receiver?
I don't know where you read that, Mr. Kraft Jr. or whatever, is making personnel decisions. Because
I thought it was Mr. Belichick Sr.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Krafts are involved in personnel decisions. I think that's strictly the domain of Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli.
And at the kickoff gala, that's what Robert Kraft said. I leave the football decisions up to Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli, so I'll take him at his word. It's my paisano again, P.J. Neccarelli. I was just listening to yesterday's podcast, and Andy said to find a great running back that would have as bad a game as Maroney did. LaDainian Tomlinson against the Eagles in Week 7 of last year had 17 carries for 7 yards, so it does happen to the best of them. Thank you.
Which is what I told him yesterday.
See that, Andy? That guy jumps shit more than I've never seen anything like him.
He really is amazing, Joe. He gets it to the point where he'll always be right. You know what I'm saying? He'll always be right because he at one point or another has said pretty much everything about every player.
Right.
He can always point back. It's like I said on that day.
I can't believe Andy was getting down on Maroney. I'm disappointed in him.
I don't think he was necessarily down on Maroney. He was just talking about how bottled up he was, and he said, his whole greatness thing. That never happens to the truly great ones. That's what he was saying. He was a little disappointed. It was surprising to him. And I said that it does happen. It happens to everybody. I remember the game that I brought up was, and it was back well before your time, Tom, back in like 96, the Patriots and the Broncos played, and Curtis Martin had something like 9 carries for 10 yards or something like that. Now, that's similar.
Yeah.
It happens. No one's going to not call Curtis Martin a great back.
Right.
Sometimes circumstances, dictate. That's a lot of carries to only have a 1-plus yard average, but it happens.
It was a tough game. He'll learn from it and move on. I mean, he has only played 3 games in the NFL, so I expect he's going to get a little bit better than this as the year goes on. Mahar from Tampa, Florida. I don't know if you guys talked about this, but has anybody mentioned the play of the secondary, especially their susceptibility to big plays? The 2 touchdowns that Denver scored came on long plays. The 2 touchdowns that the Jets scored the week before came on long plays. That's 4 big plays in 2 games. The secondary has been average the past couple of years, and again, this was not addressed in the offseason. Well, that's true. They have given up at least 4 plays of 30 yards or more through the air already, an alarming stat. Looking back to what they did last year.
Yeah, it was a trend that started last year and hurt them. I would disagree that it hasn't been addressed. I just don't think it's been addressed properly. I mean, they're signing, last year they traded for Dwayne Starks. This year they signed Eric Warfield. These guys aren't good enough.
I agree with you that they're not bringing in enough good players to make it stop happening.
I mean, God only knows how many safeties they brought in this year.
I know.
They all ended up on IR. Tabucky Jones and Mel Mitchell and they brought back Chad Scott. He's still here. But Gay is on IR now. Poteet's back. I don't think necessarily it's been a result of a lack of effort. It's poor execution. I don't think they have the right players.
No, I agree. Dwayne Smith has comments on Doug Gabriel, I believe. A lot of people are giving Gabriel praise for making a few fourth-quarter grabs when meant nothing in the game against the Broncos. I will be the first to say that he sucks until I see evidence that proves otherwise. When I say he sucks, I don't mean ability-wise. He has displayed the ability as shown in the Denver game. However, during the Jets game, he showed something that can't be changed in 1 week, and that's a lack of motivation to give the extra effort needed. Brady threw three passes in his direction in that game. Two he didn't catch simply because he didn't try, and not because the catch was impossible, but because he didn't make the extra effort. And the third was an interception when he watched the guy catch the ball and did absolutely nothing but give him a love tap as the two hit the ground with the ball in his grasp. How often do you see a DB catch an interception in front of a receiver's face and not get hit? The receiver always does something, even if it doesn't change anything. It speaks volumes about his motivation as well as his concentration.
Well, I think that's a little bit, I think that's going a little bit on the other side of the whole Doug Gabriel thing. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, I'm not ready to say he sucks.
Right.
I mean, I emailed in yesterday saying Corey Dillon sucks, but I'm not ready to say Doug Gabriel sucks.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, the whole thing with Gabriel, I'm not overly impressed with the six catches that he made in the fourth quarter, but I'm also not, I mean, this lack of effort thing we just throw around, I'm not ready for that. You know, he didn't try to catch the ball. I didn't see that. Did you?
Not really. I saw
it wasn't open.
I thought he had trouble getting open in the Jet game. I remember seeing that.
Hard time getting off the line and getting out in his routes.
That was a problem.
On the long ball, I thought maybe he could have done more to maybe break up the interception, but he's running down the field. You know, maybe he didn't recognize quickly enough that the ball was underthrown in order to do that. But this lack of effort, we just throw it around like it's fact. They didn't try. They
right.
came out flat. I hate that.
Well, this is what I think is going on, and this might all change this week. Maybe they go to the Bengals and win. At some point, you lose more than you bring in. And I think at this point, the Patriots have lost more than they brought in. They got a bunch of no-name guys out there trying to get adjusted to new systems, and you're seeing the effect on the field. If they had started with the same schedule they had last year, this year, they'd be dead. They would be dead with that murderous schedule that they had last year. But luckily, they were able to squeak out two wins against inferior teams early on. They lost to the Broncos.
Yep.
Say they lose to the Bengals. They're still 2-2 with Miami coming in. They win that game, hit the bye week at 3-2, regroup. You know, they can still go on and win the East. Are they Super Bowl contenders? I mean, from what I've seen in three games, I would say no. But they could get better as the year goes on. But this is what happens when you lose core players that, I hate to tell you this, but those X's and O's that Belichick puts on a paper, that's not the only thing that wins football games. Actual players have to go out and execute those. And when you lose those kind of players and don't bring in anyone to replace them that are nearly as good, this is what happens. And
I agree. And I agree with the whole assessment, too, of the last two off seasons in particular. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because I think, you know, the Patriots have had a ton of injuries in the last couple of seasons, last three, four seasons. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year if they similarly get hit with a lot of injuries.
Yeah, right now, they haven't even been injured yet.
Right.
That's the
they
thing.
Haven't really been
last
injured.
Last year, I mean, we could kind of go with the tough start, with the schedule, the injuries.
By this time last year, we were wondering, you know, where the hell the players were going to come from. They had, you know, major problems with Light and Harrison. And God, I mean, you know, hopefully we don't deal with a situation like that with major injuries. But, you know, in my opinion, they're less equipped to handle significant personnel loss this year than they have been in any of the last three or four.
Well, we'll have to see how it works out.
What do you got? Any more emails over there, or are we done?
We got a couple more. I can't even say this guy's name.
Oh, is that why you're avoiding it? Gary?
Said Kakis. I don't know.
Saeed.
Hello, PFW crew. You're doing a great job as usual. I just heard your part.
Pronunciation.
Saeed.
When it was said that Deion was the Patriot player, that the organization, I don't know, likes, I guess. Yes, he did all that was asked, but he was the one that broke his contract and forced the issue. So in the end, it was all about himself. Rumors were that Dion told Javon Walker not to come to New England, and the Patriots did say they tried several times to bring Walker to New England. Dion is in Seattle with his two catches for 23 yards and saying he doesn't like to block, and they are 3-0. Regarding Tom Brady...
And just scored 40-some-odd points in that one game that he played.
Regarding Tom Brady, maybe Brady is mad at Dion for dragging this on. Maybe Brady did all that Dion asked, and in the end, Brady felt betrayed by Dion, especially since Javon Walker said he was on the phone with Brady, and I'm sure Brady didn't tell Javon to come to New England. I don't know what...
I can tell you with some certainty that Brady is not mad at Branch.
No, I agree. Yeah, that's...
Matter
sure.
of fact, Brady spoke at length with Matt Hasselbeck. Maybe not speaking. I think he was text messaging. I'm sorry, I'm not in the new hip generation. Text messaged with Hasselbeck about Branch. So I'm pretty sure that he wouldn't be doing that with a player that he was mad at.
Right. He goes on to say, Brady saved money for the Patriots with his new contract. That's not true. And Dion turns around and asks for more money than Brady saved New England. That's not true.
He didn't ask for more money than Brady.
Not he even said, close. No, that what he saved, like there's that whole misconception that Brady somehow is eating tuna fish sandwiches and soup for dinner.
I agree with you. He could have gotten more, no question.
Right,
he could
exactly.
have gotten more. He is certainly not underpaid.
So him and Reggie Wayne are both Saints, and Richard Seymour needs to start producing. Plays taking place away from him are nice, but he needs to start destroying the offenses that he faces. He held out for more money, so he needs to start producing like Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren, where 2-1 will get better. Keep up the great job. Whoa, see, you know, I thought that Seymour thing was gonna really annoy people, and instead they got him as the third best lineman on the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because I didn't really give it much thought until you brought it up, but I somewhat agree with you. I do agree with the whole notion that Seymour's value can't totally be measured
right,
in stats,
I agree with
but
that.
He's not getting any stats
right
now, and he's not really been noticeable. I'll give you an example. The Pittsburgh game last year, I think.
He was all over the place.
Oh, man. I mean, if he wasn't making a sack, he was, you know, hitting Roethlisberger right as he threw the ball. He was, you know, forcing running backs back. He was doing everything. Now, maybe statistically that was a good game for him, but it might not have been, you know, a legendary statistical
right.
game for him. But he's not seemingly involved as much as he has been in the past.
We have William Lannis II. Tom Brady had a horrible game last Sunday night against the Broncos.
Well, don't hold back.
He needs to stay after practice with his new receiving core and work with them to get their timing down. This past Sunday night, his timing was way off, and he has no trust in these new receivers yet. Once he starts getting some type of rhythm with them, they should be okay after a while. Forget about Dion. He is no longer there for them.
Do you really think that Tom Brady and the core of wide receivers aren't working overtime to get up to speed?
I would have to say that they're working more than overtime to get up to speed.
I just think it's amazing. You know, they need to start working after practice. I mean,
I believe him and Caldwell and him and Jackson were working all summer, especially him and Caldwell. He mentioned that, you know, many times, and he was working with Bam Childress as well, but Bam Childress can't get on the field.
He's still in the practice squad.
Yeah. We got Mensa from the Bronx. Hi guys, I am once again writing you about this situation. I think we should give up the first draft we got from Seattle and probably a second or a third round pick for the rights to get Randy Moss from the Raiders, because Seattle will be picking very late anyways. I think the Raiders would be ready to listen to this offer. They are in the rebuilding mode. Without a good wide receiver, I don't think we are going anywhere.
I don't think there's any chance of that happening. I don't think there's any chance that Bill Belichick acquires Randy Moss.
Okay, just before we go
off,
this might
be a record
for
phone calls.
John in Rhode Island on the phone. John, what's up?
John.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you?
You put us over the top, you know. This is our record-breaking third phone call of the
show.
No
way.
It is.
You mean we set a record today?
Yes, we did.
I thought this was a real person, not John.
But see, this technically isn't a phone call.
I know. I'm well aware of that.
Otherwise, it would sound pretty much like this.
Poor Gary.
I know.
What's up?
Hey, I'm just kind of curious. I mean, I have to admit, I was really entertained by listening to the conference call from Chad Johnson. For those that may have missed it, I know that we're going to try to replay that coming up in the coming couple of hours. But what do you guys make of this whole Terrell Owens story?
Well, I don't know exactly what to make of it. It seems like it's updating, you know, as we speak on ESPN News. I find it awfully hard to believe that the guy tried to commit suicide.
I do too.
And I, you know, from what we're hearing, it, I don't know. He took a couple of painkillers.
He took some extra painkillers because of the pain in his hand. This is the latest that I'm getting from about three different sources in the last 5 minutes. So I'm kind of sitting here scrambling, looking at this story and listening to audio and video reports. But honestly. Maybe it's just the pessimist in me. Maybe it's just the cynic in me. You think in some warped way this is his way of getting attention again?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. But I don't think that this has anything to do with real suicide. You know, you're a lot smarter than Tom and I, John. Can you get discharged from the hospital? Less than 2 hours after a suicide attempt?
I suppose you can if you're Terrell Owens.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine if you're Terrell Owens, you can probably do just about anything. But technically, could you or I get out in 2 hours if you claim to have wanted to take your life? There is not a chance in you know what.
Yeah.
Because they'd have, you know, somebody from the psych ward coming in to talk to you and this. I mean, there's just no way. There's absolutely no way, no how.
Well, John, you have to
I'm
say.
I'm not a doctor.
And I was all for the signing by the Cowboys, but as of right now, it just isn't working out. I mean, it's one thing after another with this guy. You have to think Bill Parcells is probably wishing that they had just re-signed Keyshawn Johnson at
sure.
this point and stayed with him and Terry Glenn, because as dynamic as he is on the field, it's just too much.
Crap.
I mean, every week there's something new. It's just, it never ends with him.
You're absolutely right. And, Tom, I'm with you on this one. We may not agree on a lot, but this is one area where we agree on. And the fact is I thought it was a good signing for the Cowboys. Being a longtime Cowboy fan, I'm like, you know, hey, why not? I mean, you know, if you can somehow get past the head games that the guy plays, he's the preeminent wide receiver talent in the National Football League. Problem is that his head just gets in the way. And, I mean, here's how I kind of look at it. It's something we're going to discuss, you know, in the playbook coming up. But we're not. I promise, for those of you who are listening and you're good enough to hang on after the experts on PFW in progress, I promise you we're not going to delve into this too deeply because this is about Patriots football in particular. But it does kind of speak to a bigger issue at large. And I only ask this because, you know, sometimes athletes, and pro football players are certainly not immune to being athletes as we know, they live in an insular world where, you know, I just don't know that they're privy to anything and everything that you and I and Joe Q Public may be. Conversely speaking, they have to sort of insulate themselves from a lot of things that we wouldn't even think twice about, you know, jumping into or getting into. And you just don't know what's going through somebody's head. And if you've ever had the tragedy or the misfortune in your family of someone who suffers from depression issues, I can certainly tell you from practical experience along those lines, man, it's scary, and you can't treat it lightly, even though we may be tending to treat this somewhat lightly because of who it is.
No, I think that's a good point. You know, I and I'm guilty of that, absolutely. When I first heard that he was hospitalized and then someone was talking about suicide, I immediately laughed it off. I said,
yep.
There's no way.
Yep.
So I'm definitely guilty of treating this specific case lightly, no doubt.
No.
If it really is depression, then, you know, he's got more things to worry about than playing football. He's got to get that taken care of first.
Well, that's, you know, there's no doubt about that. And that's where we get back to the issue of, you know, well, does he really have a problem? And, you know, the Cowboys originally thought that maybe he wouldn't miss a lot of time even with the busted hand, but if he's really got a problem, there's no way they should be putting him out on the football field.
No, I agree.
You know, so I guess really Terrell Owens is going to end up answering, you know, all the questions that we might have in this particular instance for all of us.
Next question.
Yeah, by his return to the field. I mean, if he's back on the field this week or next for the Cowboys, this was much ado about nothing. And the guy has lost complete and utter. He is the 21st century version of the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely.
You can't
treat him seriously.
No, you can't take the guy seriously at all, which to me, in this business, man, if you don't have some shred of credibility, you got nothing. I mean, contrast this to another guy who we heard from earlier today in Chad Johnson. Now, like Terrell Owens, Johnson's a showman. Johnson's all about Chad Johnson. Johnson's all about, you know, tweaking his nose at the man or at the system. But Chad, unlike Terrell Owens, at least I'm beginning to believe this now, Chad gets it. He understands it. I mean, I loved how he, you know, wanted to talk trash with everybody, you know, at the end of the conference call.
Right.
You know, I thought that was great. I mean, he is a showman through and through. And frankly, I'd love to see a little bit more of that, at least as much as the NFL would allow. But Terrell Owens, I don't think he gets it.
Yeah, I think the difference is that Chad Johnson understands how fun it is, and he tries to have fun with it, and he doesn't take it too seriously.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, when he gets, you know, like he's still referencing the hit that he took against Cleveland, two games ago.
Correct.
That was a hit that he got, you know, sometimes when you deliver all the trash talk, you're going to get hit.
Right.
And he
right.
understands that, you know, and he embraces it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. So we'll jump into that just a little bit and hopefully open up the emails to some thoughts that folks might have on that particular issue. And Vic Carucci from NFL.com is going to join us in the program.
Excellent.
And we'll hear from Coach Belichick and also from
Marvin Lewis.
Yes, thank you. Marvin Lewis. Hello. I wonder why I was thinking Marvin Jones. Marvin Lewis.
Shade tree.
Yes, I know. Unbelievable, isn't it? And conference calls as well. So all that's going to be coming up in the playbook.
All right, sounds good. Well, you're in our time now, John. So
I know. I got to get out of here.
So we're letting you go.
All right. Well, have a good show, and we'll talk to you later.
Yep.
See you, John.
Okay, well, that's it for today. We will be back tomorrow at noon for PFW in Progress. John Rook is next. Take care.